This week, the Dow Jones blasted to all-time highs, while Bitcoin added just another 1,000 points. Over 7,000 at last check. Welcome to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. It's just a pleasure to be back with you this weekend. We have yet another Muy Grande-sized episode. Two more top industry insiders. Well, I guess really the topic du jour, Bitcoin, the mysterious coin that's not a coin, that stays in a wallet, that's not really a wallet, that gets mined but isn't mined anywhere. What's going on with this supposed currency that's not even a currency? As it turns out, Bitcoin did top 7,000 at least at one point this week, and our favorite Bitcoin ETF blew higher by about 40%. So congratulations to everybody who has exposure there. I have none, just for transparency's sake, but we're glad for you all. It's just been my best candidate easily over the last year, about 1,000%. Just one of those grand slams that we all wish we had. If you don't have any, don't feel bad. As I said, neither do I. Bitcoin is really the big story. I want for folks to wrap their minds a little bit around this. Bitcoin, of course, is not a coin. It's a digital transaction. Its wallet is really a checking account, or a free checking account, or free brokerage account, if you prefer. What we want folks to be focusing on now who do hold some Bitcoin is to make sure you're prepared for the big fork that's coming, which I just try to tell people is a dividend. It's a token dividend where you'll receive a 1-to-1 B2X. Okay, so that's your, it's called the Segwit, Segregated Witness. The idea is simple behind Segwit. We had the first Segwit split, and I think it was August. It was a smashing success, you might say, a 30% dividend. I thought this was going to be an 18 to 20% dividend. Well, the futures contracts on this upcoming November, I want to say 15th, 16th, split or fork, is showing between 23 and 36%. So we're not sure exactly where the futures contract at HitBTC will settle within about 2 weeks, but does it look good for anyone who owns Bitcoin? So, as you might expect, we've had explosive growth in the Bitcoin price ahead of the dividend, because until that date, ahead of the snapshot and into the snapshot, will be allocated 1-to-1 as long as they hold it in their private wallet. And that's the big secret. So if you haven't yet signed up, I've got all the gruesome details. And let me tell you, this is several months of research into the latest report, the Alpha Stocks Bitcoin newsletter. If you haven't yet signed up, we've had an influx of signups this week, I think simply because people are anxious to be 100% sure they'll receive this 25 to 35% or perhaps even more dividend with the amount of Bitcoin in their wallet. It took a developer of 10x to help convince me there's really only one or two safe ways. And believe me, holding it on an exchange ain't one of them, as they say in these parts. So be sure and log in. Even if you haven't logged in for a while, if you have any trouble logging back in, just send over a request. I'll send over your login information. And if you have any specific questions and you're a subscriber, just send them over to me, gsr@hughes.net. We even set up our own countdown timer, which adjusts itself according to the blockchain, which determines exactly when the snapshot will occur. So don't trust other timers. Don't trust what people tell you. The date is dynamic. It's not static. Well, we've done our best to make sure on the Nuggets webpage, as well as for our subscribers, that you'll have that. And if you want to be sure you'll have our countdown timer, you'll definitely want to make sure you log in to the account, because we'll likely be pulling the timer down from the Nuggets webpage soon. The big topicality this week: how big could Bitcoin be? And just what does that mean for the precious metals sector? We believe, actually, that Bitcoin could be paving the way for much higher precious metals prices, because transparency is key to breaking the shackles of the cartel. And who better to have on the show? Bill Murphy, 20 years with Chris Powell at GATA, leading the crusade on the precious metals sector against the cartel. Well, we agree that it looks like this Bitcoin move of 6 times over the gold price approximately looks like it could continue. And according to some of our research and some of the top folks in the sector, we're looking at about at least 11,000 in 2018, possibly 50 to 125,000 in the next 2 to 5 years, and maybe even higher. So we're going to lay out an interesting case for these lofty targets and just why it might make sense. Instead of all this bubble talk, which is all I see on bubble vision, you know, all they talk about, oh, it's a bubble, it's a bubble, it's a bubble. Folks, markets don't end when people are talking about bubbles. The internet bubble, which truly was a bubble for nearly 10 years, it ended with a market valuation of roughly $5 trillion. We just barely topped $200 billion. Now compare that with $5 trillion. Well, we have a long way to go. You could be talking another 20 to 50 fold or more in the price of the major players here in some of the altcoins. And also it's important to talk about why the altcoins have been suffering as Bitcoin soars higher. Well, obviously the SegWit dividend has everyone very excited. So they're selling off and have sold off many of their altcoins to get as many Bitcoin as possible. And then of course, Ralph Acampora, just a legend on Wall Street. It's an honor to have him back on the show. He outlines his favorite investing tools and his arsenal, the MACD, RSI, trends, gives you some of the subtle nuances that only a veteran can provide. And again, remember to sign up for the Alpha Stocks Bitcoin newsletter. We have all the information you will need. And frankly, I don't think you can find anywhere else. Obviously, get excited about a topic and I pour myself into it. And the upcoming fork, it is essential you have the best information. I'm offering a cold storage wallet, one you plug right into your computer or laptop or even your mobile phone, actual 24 karat gold chip that just plugs right in. It's a ledger wallet, and it is the safest way, I believe, and most economical to participate in the upcoming SegWit fork. I'm giving one of these wallets away to the first 20 subscribers, new subscribers this weekend. So time is of the essence. Be sure and get those new subscriptions in for anyone 1 year, and as long as it's a recurring subscription, meaning an annual subscription, not just a one-time payoff. If you sign up for the 5 year, we're sending 2 wallets, and for the 10 year, 3 wallets. So if you'd like some of these backup wallets, which we think is by far the safest and most economical way to make sure that your Bitcoin are ready and safe, sign up. You're also supporting the show. And of course, Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. GoldSeek.com begins now with a market weather recap. Partly cloudy weather persisted over the precious metals for the second week running. On continued U.S. dollar strength, gold gave back only $3, though, finishing at $12.69 an ounce, while silver actually bucked the trend, adding nearly a dime, finishing at $16.75. The precious metals XAU shares were off less than a dollar, ending at $80.72, while black gold blasted into the stratosphere just as anticipated for months here, bursting above that head and shoulders neckline as we've been alluding to, adding another 2 points en route to 60 and then maybe 70, finishing the week at $55.64 per barrel. Moving on, the top story this week, news from the U.S. Labor Department. The economy added 261,000 jobs in October, but it was a bit lower than Wall Street analyst expectations of around 310,000. The unemployment rate, though, did manage to tick down, and we watched that most closely, to 4.1%, down from 0.1%. Meanwhile, the topic on everyone's mind, it seems like this day, Bitcoin 11,000. That's what one blockchain expert standpoint researches analyst raising his target to 11,000 and maintaining that we could see 50,000 in the next few years. $200 trillion tied up in cash, stocks, bonds, and gold. 40 times the Forex. The Forex is the world's largest market. It's $5 trillion. 40 times that is the amount of money out there. He believes that at least 1% will find its way into the cryptos over the next 10 years, which could make Bitcoin a $2 trillion valuation, i.e. his 50,000 at least target. And some folks are looking for 500,000. He notes that that is a possibility, 120,000 to 500,000. You'd be looking at an $8 trillion Bitcoin market cap leading to $500,000 in the next 5 years. Okay, lofty targets. Let's take them one at a the time. We're shooting for 10,000 now, then 25, and hopefully onwards and upwards. Elsewhere, this week, the London Blockchain Summit, where UK's Royal Mint discussed ownership of gold on the blockchain. It's gaining a lot of momentum. The RMG platform should be rolling out in coming years. And again, this is right along with our theme that gold aficionados need not fear Bitcoin. We believe that Bitcoin could be the magic bullet that sends gold and silver out of the malaise and into the stratosphere. And we're seeing signs on that in today's precious metals. Bottom line, West Texas carved out that head and shoulders pattern, blew higher. CRB followed suit, and the precious metals continue to wind up like a coiled viper. It looks like another month or so of backing and filling before this rocket leaves the pad. Just more time to accumulate discounted precious metals. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility unlimited again. No big surprise there from horizon to horizon of the New York Stock Exchange. News that we would have a new Fed chief, Jerome H. Powell. The Federal Reserve chairman was announced on Thursday, known as a strong, smart, but dovish candidate, which of course is solid news for equities and even good for the precious metals. Powell has remained a Fed governor since 2012 and worked closely with Janet Yellen. Plus, the Dow Jones liked the new Fed head, adding 105 points in the week, closing at 23,539. And of course, the ISM Manufacturing Index was stronger than expected. More good news, a 13-year high of nearly 61%. The S&P 500 picked up on the news, picking up 7 points. And the NASDAQ picked up 63, ending at 67.64. Just an amazing number. And as mentioned earlier, the Bitcoin ETF added 269.40%. And get this, folks, the Bitcoin Investment Trust, GBTC, up 700% year-to-date. And turning to the Fed Funds Futures contract, virtually a lock on the upcoming rate hike scheduled for the December Fed meeting. Bottom line on U.S. equities. Our 7 indicator greed to fear index remains very greedy, but again, still room for further gains. I continue to hold on with to my target of Dow 24,000 before the next consolidation. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. For nearly 2 decades now, next year will mark his 20th year working with Chris Powell at the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. Recently had a talk at the New Orleans Investment Conference.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Great to have you back. And you know, 2 decades leading the troops against the gold cartel. If you don't mind, maybe a synopsis of the New Orleans Investment Conference talk.
It was just a little bit of a review of these past 20 years and what we've done, the conferences we've had, and what we've done to travel all over the world to expose the manipulation of the gold and silver prices and what we've tried to do to change the situation. And it's quite frankly, a really tough job because we're taking on the richest, most powerful people in the world, and people want to be a part of that, the establishment group, and don't want to point things out that are wrong. And as I mentioned in my presentation there, it's what God has been trying to expose. And one day it's going to be a big scandal. But getting there is tough at times because we don't have a free press. They won't even mention what God has to say and won't even mention the name. So we carry on and we're going to get there, but it's taking a long time.
Eventually, gold will reestablish itself, and we're seeing some interesting imitation gold. Some people are calling, of course, the Bitcoin phenomenon its own digital gold money. We all know that's not really entirely true, but, you know, here we're looking at 5 or 6 times the price of gold per Bitcoin. Do you have any thoughts there?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I probably mentioned it before. When I was in Acapulco at Jeff Berwick's conference, the Bitcoin people that were there was partly a Bitcoin cryptocurrency conference. Gold reached the same price of gold at 1240, and they were ecstatic. And now look what it's done, over 6,000, and we're barely above the same price. And for me, this is a perfect example of how rigged the gold price is and what's been done by the gold cartel. That if it weren't for them, you would have gold and silver acting like other assets, which, you know, what the Dow has done, the NASDAQ, and art, and real estate, and the cryptocurrencies, and the only two that just sitting doing nothing, which should be a part of the show more than anything, is gold and silver.
But you know, it's interesting, Bill Murphy, you'd say that. There's some talk among the gold crowd about this impending new contract in Shanghai. It's crude slash yuan slash gold-backed contract. You might say removes the petrodollar arrangement from Asian trade. Do you suspect that we don't know probably what the tipping point will be, but this could be salvos across the bow that sets the precious metals in motion to higher prices?
Well, it could be, and there was a lot of talk about this ahead of their big five-year Congress and that they have. It came and went, and nothing was mentioned and not discussed, and we'll just have to wait and see. These past years, things like this that were supposed to be, you know, very constructive haven't meant a thing, quite frankly. And they should, and eventually, don't get me wrong, they're all going to add up, and they will. But they're negated, and I hate to be trite about it in a way, but nothing really matters except right now what the gold cartel can get away with. And even like today, they tacked again at their Plan A time, which is around 3 in London, which is around 3 a.m. New York. So it's another day of sell gold and silver.
Well, we all know, though, that those days are numbered. Eventually, the precious metals really have to reestablish their preeminence in the financial markets. You know, well, here's an interesting story from GATA, in fact, how the CME is creating new futures contracts to trade, you know, the cryptocurrencies. Well, my comment on that news story, who cares? The difference with Bitcoin is you really can't short it because it's so hard to borrow against it. The same thing could happen with gold and silver. Eventually, it will become impossible to short because there won't be any to be lent. And I think you can make an interesting case for gold and silver now that, yes, you can buy all the paper contract shorts you want and go naked if you're a big institution against it, which I can't recommend for anybody. Good luck trying to find any fair market, transparent market, where you can sell against the market in a honest, open, transparent way.
If I were the Bitcoin people, I would not be too happy about having a futures market developed for their investment, their asset there, because it's always like the kiss of death. And I don't know how they would do it, and you're right. Seems to me to be very difficult, but if they get involved in that market, they're going to probably run into trouble like they've run into gold. And all I can say is that, again, that I don't think gold and silver have ever been cheaper in their history relative to other assets. So while it's a very difficult time right now, it's the time to be really looking at it and accumulating and not running away, because gold and the other assets have made their moves, and because of the suppression and artificially low prices, gold and silver have big ones to come.
Underscore your idea of a solid move ahead for precious metals. I mean, we can just take, you know, Bitcoin as a case in point. Everyone thought, oh, when it hit 1,000, you know, that was it, and it approached the price of gold. Well, this has to be a bubble. And, of course, we're up, I don't know how many fold this year, and it looks as though we could run to 7,000 to 10,000 at least before a big consolidation. Is it the SegWit2 that everyone's looking forward to? Possibly, because it amounts to about an 18% dividend in the next 2 weeks for Bitcoin holders. If you look at a chart, I mean, it's just vertical. We've got something, a day of reckoning like that for gold and silver. When a market just gets out of control and people cannot figure out how to get involved with a tiny market, especially like silver, I think it amounts to putting the water of the Hoover Dam through a straw. Something's going to burst.
Yeah, well, you've heard me mention this before too, Chris. I think for silver, if it takes out 21, it will actually trade like a Bitcoin. I mean, not quite to that extent, but I think pretty close in terms of the amount of percentage it can go up. So I think that's why they're on top of it, why the open interest is so high in silver, which is ridiculous. They're just trying to keep it under control, and they've been winning so far. But when they lose control, you'll have another Bitcoin scenario.
You know, following that 1980s corner by the Hunt brothers, it's such an obvious valuation. Forget the technicals, forget the amazing qualities of the precious metals and all the different means of investing in them. It seems like a cloud that's containing them here. What do you think breaks their hold, their shackles?
This will be when the physical market is strong enough to overpower their ability to use the derivatives of futures markets and other means to keep the price down, where they run out of physical supply to keep dumping on the market. Eventually, that's going to happen, and then they won't be able to stop the moves that are coming.
What are the signs that we'd be watching for? Would you expect to see, you know, lock limit up days?
In terms of how things are trading on the COMEX, and instead of the same old sell the rally patterns, and and you know, sucking in the longs and then flushing them out, and then they liquidate, and the gold cartel shorts cover, and then they go, we go through the same ring around the rosy routine. That's got to change, and we look, that's one thing, you know, people like yourself and myself look for every day is a change in the patterns.
You know, as Bitcoin just goes bananas, you know, it was recently, I don't know, as low as $200. I wonder if people have really thought about the implications to the U.S. dollar, to the reserve currency, because it looks to me like we have a new contender for a global reserve currency that is outside the domain of the draconian practices and legislation and all the rest of these archaic rules that forbid about 6 out of the 7 billion people in this world from owning a checking account, from being involved in the advanced financial regime that we have in the Western world. And suddenly anyone who can open up a wallet on a friend's laptop or in a, you know, a local library computer has access to a checking account, banking account, and essentially a brokerage account, might I add, for no money down, no deposit, no maintenance fees, absolutely no upfront costs. You walk in barefoot into a local library, and in a few minutes, you have a wallet. This is really a revolution, and I'd like to tie it all back together with the precious metals. As Bitcoin establishes itself, let's just say a parallel reserve global currency, it would seem to me is that that really reveals the cracks in the foundation of our currency system. As ironic as this may sound, Bitcoin may be the precious metals aficionado's best friend. Because I believe that Bitcoin and related currencies like Litecoin, Monero, are essentially going to, you might think of them as the highway repairman crew that is paving an interstate highway for precious metals hire.
Yeah, because it's good news, bad news. The bad news is short term. It's frustrating the heck out of people in our sector who watch these things go, and we just sit there like Dickie the Dunce, and our prices get suppressed. But you're absolutely correct. It is a highway or a roadmap for what's coming in the gold silver prices once the gold cartel, you know, loses control. And I think that is going to occur, and it will come probably out of nowhere when we least expect it. Some event's going to happen, which we haven't happened in a long time, to upset the apple cart in the financial system, and off we go. And then people will know what the cryptos have done and figure that gold and silver are going to do the same thing.
When this thing really starts to take off, instead of being, I think, a gradual, you know, 727, you know, Boeing 727 liftoff, I mean, you really could see a Sputnik-like or, I don't know, Apollo-like launch, maybe even more like one of those cruise missiles from a submarine, you know, with the thermonuclear warheads. Again, there's just no market for the global, the amount of money, the Bitcoin, the dollars, the yuan, the yen, the euros. When you're seeing the futures at $1,500, but when you go to eBay and you try to buy a silver bullion bar and they're quoting you $2,700, and you start to say, wait a minute, do I trust these markets? Or is the real market physical? We have something similar occurring in the U.S. equities markets. There is a Bitcoin ETF, which I recommended since under 100, recently reached 1,000 for my listeners. So it was a tenfold move in about 12 months. And it has done nothing but sit there around 600 or 700 as Bitcoin flew higher by 50% from 4,000 to 6,000. Now, if I were one of these ETF holders, I don't know about you, but I'd be pounding the keys of my phone trying to get in touch with the folks running this ETF. Why has our ETF been sitting motionless as Bitcoin shot higher 50%? We've got something like that coming down the pike here to GLD, SLV, and the Street Tracks ETF. Worthless promise. As we wrap up here today, tell us more about Gata and La Metropole Cafe.
People can check out Gata at www.gata.org. My colleague Chris Powell does a great job, and we had much fun in New Orleans together. It was great seeing them. La Metropole Cafe, we've been going for a long time now, nearly those 2 decades. If people can sign up for a free 2-week trial and see if it is of interest.
Well, we certainly recommend that they do. Bill Murphy.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
With With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Who better to have on the show with the Dow Jones Industrials topping a new all-time record? Ralph Acampora of Altera Wealth Management. Hello, sir.
Good morning. Thank you. How are you?
Last time you were on the show, Dow just shy of 20,000. That's in the rearview mirror now. Looks like we're headed towards 24,000.
Brutally honest, my best target for the year was 22,900, and obviously we're above that now. And I did that months before. I always make my forecast in December, looking out. So that was December 2016. Factored into that seasonal factor like honeymoons, presidential honeymoons. It succeeded everything that I thought. If I compare President Trump with President Reagan, they were both outsiders. Reagan had a 10% honeymoon rally in 6 months, and then he had a bear market of 24% next year and a half. Current president is far exceeding that. I know there's been a lot of concern, whether it's North Korea or whatever, but the market seems to be holding it very, very well. So there's an old dictum that I believe in, never fight the trend.
And the trend has been certainly on our side. You know, last week, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, several in the sector did quite well, besting earnings expectations. Any thoughts if that theme will continue?
Yes, very much so. Let's face it, they would benefit enormously from deregulations and high interest rates also benefit the financials. So from where I sit, many, many cases, there's a lot more upside to come.
You know, that's really a positive thing to hear with all the negativity in the mainstream press. Are there any other sectors that you find appealing here?
Yes. You know, I have to hold my nose when I look at technology, only because they're so far ahead of themselves, but the momentum is there. You know, I have to say one thing about the current market is, in the technical terms, I mean, it's getting parabolic. So I wouldn't necessarily be chasing things here. If I owned them, I guess maybe I would continue holding. But I actually have been advising some funds recently to slowly, over time, start lightening up a little bit. Not that I'm looking for a major decline anytime soon. I have no indication of that.
It reminds me at least of the 1999-2000. Maybe we're not that frothy yet, but do you think that we might not quite get the wake-up call that we had in 2000-2008, that this might be a 1987-style sell-off?
Unless there's a sudden surprise, and obviously there could definitely be a surprise like North Korea or something like that that could really shake the market. That's why I've been encouraging people just to slowly lighten up a little bit.
I like the idea that valuations are stretched. Any other sectors you're watching, maybe out of favor, undervalued, something to add to the portfolio?
Well, I think if you look selectively at healthcare, many of those individual stocks are doing well. Believe it or not, utilities, although they're not making all-time new highs in the last couple of weeks, but holding up very, very well.
shift over to the technical toolbox. You know, I know a lot of our listeners are technically inclined. I know they're just dying to know what is legendary Acampora's favorite. If he had to pick two or three indicators, maybe the MACD, trend lines, moving averages, what would you just hate to trade without?
You hit it right on the head. You have to be able to identify a trend, okay? I mean, it sounds simple, but it's extremely important. I never fight a trend, up or down, whatever it is, I go with it. When it comes to indicators, I'm a very simple guy. I like to look at the MACDs and an RSI. I'm basically more intermediate to longer term oriented in my outlook. So I look at those indicators on a weekly basis. Daily, I think you get a lot of noise sometimes, but weekly, I think if you MACD dead cross or golden cross, you know, when the moving averages cross, I think that's a pretty good indication.
As we wrap up, can you share any contact information or any other projects you might be working on?
I have my Twitter account. I have 26,000, 27,000 followers.
I'm going to go sign up right now. I want to encourage all our listeners, subscribers, and newsletter readers to sign up to Ralph Acampora's Twitter account. We're going to have the links up there.
You saw the article in the Wall Street Journal 2 weeks ago. Hand-painted the largest chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average on the side of my barn. It's my 50th anniversary in the business. So I have a monthly bar chart starting in 1967. It's 70 feet long, 16 feet high.
Can't wait to put that picture up on the website. All right, we want to thank you, Ralph Acampora, for your time today.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Bix Weir, analyst and researcher, has some great material for our silver aficionados. Welcome on your debut appearance here on GoldSeek, Bix Weir.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Before we get into anything else, let's talk silver. I think I mentioned before the discussion that you make some astounding claims regarding, I think, the prospects for AG. My listeners have had their eardrums worn out on the reasons behind why we need silver in every portfolio, everything from the astounding industrial applications that detractors try to use as a reason not to own silver. And so you've got some great material as to why even three-digit silver may be a low-ball estimate.
My interest in silver goes back 17, 18 years with GATA in the early days, and you know, we knew people were rigging the markets. We didn't know how. We didn't know exactly who it was. And we thought it was the banks. And you know, mainly it was gold back then. But, you know, once you learn about the silver story and what's going on behind the scenes and how little there is left, you quickly make the realization that silver is a much better metal to own as far as potential for appreciation when the manipulation ends. I worked with GATA for 10 years, you know, with Bill Murphy and Chris Powell, trying to track down who's doing this market rigging, who's doing the price suppression. And I kind of split off in about 2008, 2009, because I think I discovered who was doing it and why they were doing it. and it's all done with computers and derivatives. As we know, the amount of derivatives that are traded vastly exceeds the amount of physical metal out there. So, my work in the last 7-8 years has been tracking down, you know, who writes these programs to rig the markets, how rigged are they, what kind of volumes are we talking about, such that they can slam the price of silver from $50 down to $20 with a click of a mouse. And that's kind of where this strange trip led me, and it led me right to the halls of the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury. So we go from there. They have full control right now, and I do believe that they will let go of that control at some point, and that's when you want to be in physical silver, holding it in your hands and ready to ride that price to the moon.
Exactly. This is what I wanted to get into today. I want this to be the focus, the crux, at least, of the first part of this discussion. Your seminal research into the computer algorithms and programming behind the scenes that allows, let's just say allegedly, because from what I've read and what I've heard in previous interviews, this is really groundbreaking stuff.
Well, it is, and it goes back to the early days of computers back in the 60s and 70s when, you know, computers were just being really invented. And the first shareable computer program was a program called BASIC. And BASIC, I don't know if you remember it, but it was written by a guy named...
I cut my teeth on BASIC.
Yeah, if you took any computer classes in the beginning, you had BASIC, you had Fortran. But the very early days, it was BASIC because it was the first shareable computer programming language. Now, the guy who invented BASIC was a guy named John Kimony. And John Kimony, really brilliant man, basically invented the ability for individuals to program and use computers back in the 1960s. But his best friend was a guy named Alan Greenspan. And Alan Greenspan, as we know, used to be a huge gold bug. I mean, he wrote the paper Golden Economic Freedom, and he was a gigantic gold bug, but most people didn't know that he was a computer expert in the 1960s. Writing programs using John Kimony's BASIC computer language, Alan Greenspan was the first guy to invent the banking programs that we use today. You know, today we look around, it's like everything is electronic money. There's very little physical money and very little gold and silver. It's all electronic. But Alan Greenspan was the guy who wrote the very first programs, and he was working with Arthur Burns, who was his mentor. He was the head of the Fed at the time. But Alan Greenspan actually blamed himself for the Y2K problem because he was the guy who programmed only two digits instead of four. So it really goes back to the very early days of computers and how the Federal Reserve Bank and Alan Greenspan and a couple other people within that close circle invented these computer programs to rig the markets in order to go off a gold standard. Because normally when you go off a gold standard, you've got, you know, 8 to 10 years before it all falls apart. Unless you rig the prices of everything from gold to silver to oil to all commodities to the stock market. And you can do that if you have control of computer programs. And the reason I found all this out was documentation that came out of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Talks about this. It's a comic book that talks about this character, Ruta. Root A, which is a term in the very early days of BASIC computing. It is the root foundation of our monetary system, of the programs behind the scenes that run on a monetary system. So all that came out, and then there's so many items that I would connect and link, and you can see it today with the volumes that are traded of silver on the COMEX. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's traded 100 to 1. It's so fraudulent because, you know, 100 times the electronic metal is trading versus the physical metal. That number is very wrong. It's not 100 to 1. It's over 2,000 to 1, and that's just on the COMEX. So people need to get their head around the idea that the price of silver can be manipulated and suppressed with a click of a mouse from the basement of the Fed or the Treasury. That's where they have their trading rooms. A really interesting stuff, a lot of backup documentation and information and things coming out that are really confirming what I've long suspected, which is there is a plan to control the system via computers by controlling gold and silver prices, and there is a plan to destroy the mechanism that controls it by printing so much money that people won't accept it anymore. And that's kind of where we are with the United States.
Who'd have thought that Sir Dr. Alan Greenspan is Mr. Robot, is Elliot? It's better than science fiction. Major hat tip for, I think, being the first to uncover this and make it public in a very easy to understand way. Can you give us a quick synopsis, 3 bullet points from your excellent article that we've already published, we're going to publish again and keep disseminating it, but 3 of Bix Weir's favorite bullets for why silver is a 3-digit plus metal and how it's going to get there?
The first one, and the most important, if this manipulation ends, which I think it will at some point, it's going to come down to who has physical in their own possession, physical silver in your own possession, not held anywhere else. And that's where the key is. The silver to gold ratio is artificial. It is not the price ratio right now at 70 to 1 or something like that is ridiculous, because the availability of physical gold and physical silver is right around 6 billion ounces each, which is a 1-to-1 ratio. And gold is great. I love gold, but there's a lot more gold than they're telling you out there. And you don't really need gold for anything other than storing it for monetary reasons and jewelry, maybe. Silver is a completely the opposite story. You need silver for monetary purposes. It's the most used monetary metal in the history of monetary metals. But the key is technology has changed. Technology consumes silver. It doesn't save silver like gold is saved in a vault. Technology consumes silver. So most of the silver that has ever been mined in the world, which is 50 to 60 billion ounces, is now in landfills, is on the top of roofs and in solar panels, is exploded smart bombs. It is scattered in little tiny pieces all around the world. So that 50 to 60 billion ounces that was available potentially maybe 50, 60 years ago, now is all gone because it's been distributed in little tiny bits in landfills and your cell phone and your flat screen TVs. So the difference between the price ratio of gold and silver versus the amount available physical of each is night and day. And that's why the biggest reason, I think, at some point in the future when the silver rigging stops in the electronic markets, I believe that silver and gold will cross 1-to-1 ratio, which is a gigantic move, obviously, from where it is today.
For our high school econ majors, you know, or college econ majors, an inelastic demand curve. It just basically means that we need so much silver. Okay, it's so integral to our manufacturing and production. You mentioned solar panels and photovoltaics. Nevertheless, we have tons of the stuff just in soldering. It disappears forever. The soldering in your laptop, your cell phone, in the walls, in the doors. Oh, how about just light switches? It's gone forever. It disappears, and it's an incredibly useful substance, the most malleable, the most reflective, arguably the most electrically conductive, antimicrobial, it's an antibacterial, probably even antiviral. Let's look at the drachma in Greece. I think there's a 600-700 year period of stability where the only real money in circulation for the most part was a silver coin. Fast forward to the United States, 100 years of economic dominance and stability. And what did we have in circulation by law? You know, drum roll, please. Up until recently, but the bad money has driven out the good. Thank you, Mr. Grisham. So here we are today, Bix. Where does this all lead?
Well, I think we're coming close to that point where we're running out of silver. And the reason I think this is something that happened in 2016. And not many people have commented on this, but we all know the COMEX and the LBMA, they don't trade real metal for the most part. Mostly it's futures and options contracts. It's all futures and options on the COMEX. The COMEX volume for silver went up 45% in 2016. This is an unbelievable number, but in electronic contracts, they were trading an average per day of 400 million silver ounces. The need to rig the markets and control the price of silver is getting harder and harder for these people. And if you look at if you take the average daily volume of silver traded on the COMEX and you expand it out to say how much silver was traded on the COMEX in 2016, it's over 100 million ounces or 100 billion ounces of silver, which is ridiculous, as we all know, because there's only been 50 to 60 billion ounces ever mined. So it's getting harder and harder to rig the silver market. Gold is just the same. Gold's up 51%. The amount of derivative trades versus how much physical silver is out there. To control the price, they need to layer more and more derivative trades on top of it, and that's how the prices are getting rigged. And we had a great confession from Deutsche Bank, and they turned in all their friends of market riggers, and the CFTC hasn't done anything about it. There's a lot of news to come out about that in the coming months and years, because this is an admission of what GATA has been saying for years, that the bullion banks rig the gold and silver markets. This is an admission in court, and there's a list of banks, and all those banks that are on the list of those who got turned in are on the LBMA. There's five members, clearing members, and they're all on that list. So, yes, GATA was correct all along. The silver price is rigged. The gold price is rigged. And you need to get in before the rigging goes away.
All right, Bixwer, what about the skeptic in the audience saying, what's this I hear about silver shortages? Isn't silver a major byproduct of nickel and particularly copper production?
Well, I say that's a great example of what, you know, we're going to need going forward. I mean, how much silver, physical silver, is really out there? Nobody really knows. According to the LBMA, they claim to trade over 129 billion ounces of physical silver every year. Again, another report that's completely ridiculous. The fact that the amount of silver mined and available is going to grow is true. And the same is true for the amount of uses we will find for silver. Silver is still the best conductor of electricity. We are living in a technological age, and those inventions and technologies that Donald Trump talked about in his inauguration speech are coming true, and they will stop holding back the ability for people to create and innovate new electronic forms of energy, forms of communication going forward. Really exciting for silver, and I'm glad that there's more silver. Bring it on. Bring on as much silver as you can, because they're printing up way too many dollars, and what we need to do is get rid of the electronic fake silver that's traded on the COMEX and the LBMA.
I'd like your thoughts on what happened recently during our presidential election. I think, in fact, it may have been the actual day. In India, I'm bringing this up to all of our guests in the past couple of weeks, and price spike up to over $3,600, a moonshot on the yellow metal, on news that they would be returning to a more digital currency. Folks might say, well, it's India, it's contained. But I worry if it's not really the canary in the proverbial mineshaft. What happens when people en masse really wake up to the idea there's something wrong here with our greenback?
You got to remember that price is determined on the COMEX and the LBMA, and for gold, they have on the COMEX, 27, 28 million ounces of electronic gold trade every day on the COMEX. So these numbers are not real that you see, the $1,300 or $1,200 or the $18 for silver. These are not real numbers. These are electronic computers trading back and forth. The majority of these trades are the bullion banks working for the U.S. Treasury and U.S. Fed. The whole concept of, oh, it spiked, the price spiked because of something else, is kind of irrelevant, because it really doesn't matter. They control it with a computer. They can change the price from $1,300 to $13,000 to probably $100 with a click of a mouse, because it's unlimited the amount of sell orders that they can put in if you're the U.S. government and the Fed, because you don't have the CFTC watching you, obviously, because you know they haven't come down on the silver or gold manipulators. So, yes, there are a lot of signs. You can give me a million different signs why silver and gold should spike. But the question is, how high should it spike, and how high will it spike without the manipulators and their, you know, trading electronic contracts back and forth? That's the real exciting thing. Everything else, we've been arguing these points since, you know, the 90s, how gold should go up because they're printing so much money. And, you know, there's 50 million reasons. But ultimately, it comes down to who controls the price of gold and silver with what computer programs and when they're going to end that game.
Who controls the price of the precious metals and what are the implications, please?
Well, it's the Exchange Stabilization Fund. It's run out of the basement of the U.S. Treasury and at the Federal Reserve. The basement of the U.S. Treasury has a trading floor, computer trading floor. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York runs the operations from the New York. And then they've got the bullion banks and people like J.P. Morgan, who actually admitted in court in the lawsuit in 2003 that they were an agent of the U.S. government. It was a lawsuit by Blanchard and Company against J.P. Morgan and Barrick Gold. And in their memorandum asking the judge to throw out the case, J.P. Morgan said, we are an agent of the U.S. government. You can't sue us because we have sovereign immunity. That sums it up right there. That's why you don't see J.P. Morgan's name in all the lawsuits for silver manipulation that are coming out of the Deutsche Bank situation. So, yeah, it's all done out of the basement of the U.S. Treasury and U.S. Fed using the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Real interesting thing now, they've put Steve Mnuchin, or trying to put Steve Mnuchin, as the head of the U.S. Treasury. He was the head of computer trading at Goldman Sachs. And that's a really scary deal. They tried to get Vincent Viola as head of the Navy. He was the head of Virtu Financial, which is a computer rigging company that is in charge of the SLV and GLD rigging operations behind the scenes. So, yeah, I don't know if Trump's going to continue the market rigging or stop the market rigging, but there's enough countries in the world that know exactly what the U.S. is doing that I think it's a good time for the U.S. to stop doing it because it's no longer beneficial. All the metals going east is no longer beneficial for us to rig the markets when China's cleaning our clock. So I think it's time to end this game and go back to free markets where you have people walking into exchanges with metal and with money, and the exchange happens, and then they walk away.
Then in this chaotic system, what will be the tipping point? What puts us over the edge?
It's going to be a click of a mouse, ultimately, that ends the rigging of gold and silver, which will end everything else. Because there's so many derivatives piled on to all these things I've talked about. And everybody talks about that, hundreds of trillions of dollars in derivatives that almost imploded in 2008. Well, we're at that point again. The next time that someone like Hank Paulson goes into Congress and says, we need $700 billion to bail out the banks or the whole world's going to end, the next time they're not going to bail out the banks. They can't. They're going to be going to Congress for $20 trillion instead of $700 billion. And the people have learned so much in the past 8-9 years that they're going to say, no, we're not going to allow this game to go on. And then we're going to have to start something new. And that's a whole other discussion. But there are plans for that at the Fed Boston and that I talk about in my Road to Ruta work. And it's real interesting. And I think we could come out of this pretty good. But a lot of people will lose a lot of virtual assets.
Obviously, our officials have carte blanche opportunity, deep pockets, or maybe they have the deepest of pockets. As you mentioned, they're in cahoots, if you will, with J.P. Morgan, and that's nothing new. I mean, go read about the actual J.P. Morgan himself, even the creation, as I understand it, of the Federal Reserve. This is nothing new. Obviously, there's going to be people listening to our voices who own StreetTrax SLV, the silver ETF, and there are other paper promises out there. It seems as though you would be an advocate of physical precious metals.
Definitely. All our exchanges today, the stock markets, the COMEX, the LBMA, are all run on fractional reserve systems. And you can tell by the volumes traded. If you look at SLV and GLD, first of all, they allow shorting, which completely it takes away from the fact that you're supposed to be buying physical when you buy a share of SLV or GLD. By allowing shorting, people are buying thinking they own an ounce of physical silver when they don't because it's been shorted. That's one problem. Another problem is the amount of the volume traded on those exchanges and all exchanges in stocks and bonds and currencies. They trade in huge rehypothecated fractional reserve system. So SLV, I don't know what the total float of SLV is right now, but it's usually 10 to 15 days everything trades because of these high-frequency traders. They have trades going off at the milliseconds. And a lot of these trades are never settled. Settlement meaning the contracts are exchanged, the money is exchanged, and the share is changed into your name. That doesn't happen anymore. And the SEC has even said there's over 200 million shares not settled every single day on the stock market. The problem is when the music stops and these derivatives go off, you're going to have 10 to 15 people saying, oh, I own a share of SLV for every share there is out there. So it's a fractional reserve system. They all deal on net pools. All these brokerage houses deal on net pools. At the end of the day, they net out their buys and sells, or they're supposed to, and they still can't even do that. So very, very problematic. And then if you have the banking crash, you've got another problem because there are counterparty risks between you and your money because all these brokerage houses use the banks. The banks go down, the brokerage houses go down.
It's reminiscent of MF Global, maybe mixed in with a little Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers.
Those were one-off instances that were able to be contained. It was difficult to contain them, but they were able to be contained. This is going to be everything at the same.
Systemic. And I know that folks are then wondering, what's next? I think you alluded to that. I mean, we've been speculating here for several months that you might see a cryptocurrency backed by either silver or gold or some other means. But, I mean, we've never had a totally global, interconnected, fiat-based system with very few exceptions.
I agree, except it's not just the global fiat currencies. Everything has been put onto an electronic disk and electronic storage. So people think they're assets. If you ask people in the early 1970s and you said, would you accept owning an electronic virtual asset over your current asset? They'd say, no way. Are you kidding me? An electronic blip would be used as an asset? Well, now everything is an electronic asset. And everything has been rehypothecated so many times, and it's such a fractional reserve system. Nothing is going to survive this in the electronic form. Now, I think Bitcoin will, because it is nobody's debt. The interesting thing about the electronic assets is they're all somebody's debt. They all rely on a third person to stay in business. Bitcoin doesn't. It is an electronic asset unto itself. As long as you don't hold it in the third-party storage place, you know, like on an exchange or in an online wallet, it's your asset. It's an underlying asset. Everything electronic else is usually people's debt and relies on a third party to stay in business. So it's so much bigger than the crashing of unbacked fiat money. This is a global buy-in to electronic assets being worth something when you try to cash them in. And there'd be so many defaults of the third parties that nobody's going to stay in business.
About half of America, 160, 170 million folks, half the households at least, have some exposure to equities, to U.S. stocks. And very few people understand the fact that these are just, you might say, illusory means of ownership. You really have a tough time even getting physical shares, the certificates, cut and sent to your home. What can you really do with them? You can't walk up to your neighbor and say, hey, you know, here's 10 shares of Google or 10 shares of Tesla or Netflix. It's really a game of musical chairs. And when the music stops, as you say, the whole system is infused with debt, and everything is debt-based. I mean, is that not the whole concept of the fractional reserve system? We're not going to know what hit us, are we, when this edifice finally implodes?
And that's what is talked about in the Fed Boston documents that I've, you know, analyzed and looked at for the last 10 years is, you know, how do we reallocate assets going forward is a big thing that they talk about. And Alan Greenspan actually came up with a great idea. After the system crashes, his idea was to reallocate assets according to Social Security balances, which is very unique because what it does, it kind of rewards the people who've made the most money and worked the hardest, but not, you know, extraordinarily because, you know, they cap Social Security balances every year, how much they take out of your paycheck. So it kind of, and it gets the older people who paid mostly into Social Security, they get most first because you got to take care of the old people first. So it's a great idea, but even in the Fed Boston comics and in the teacher's guide to these comics and in the discussions they have about it, they say, we don't know if the people are going to accept something like this.
I'm a listener who bought silver in 2011 at the peak around $50, and I've been burned. I'm not happy about it. Convince me to hold it past 50, and where will it be? Where will it go?
Well, I plan on holding silver until the manipulation ends. So as far as where it would go, I don't really know, most people don't know, the ratio between gold and silver is 70-1 currently, and the amount of physical available is probably 5-1, you know, 5 ounces of gold for every 1 ounce of physical silver, because all the gold is being saved and all the silver needs to be used. So you can draw your own conclusions. I give many big numbers when I do the analysis, because that's what comes out. Without manipulation, we're going to see somewhere, at least for a short time, somewhere around a 1-1 ratio, price of gold to the price of silver.
I have a bevy of additional questions. We'll have to save that for another chat. Bix Weir, please tell people more about Road to Route A, what they'll find, and why they need to bookmark that site.
RoadToRuta.com is my website. I have a YouTube channel, Road to Ruta. It has a video on there explaining what the Road to Ruta theory is, because it takes a little while to get used to it. Come on by, put your email in, and you'll get free emails on information that I look at every day.
Great stuff. Can't wait to have you back.
Great. Sounds good.
Rob Kirby, macroeconomic analyst, formerly on the trading desk. He knows what's going on behind the scenes, and that's why we'd like to hear his thoughts. Welcome back, Rob Kirby.
Pleasure to be with you, Chris.
Great to have you. You know, we've had another good solid year. Silver up over 14%. XAU still on fire. Never really even hiccuped. Give us an idea of what you see in the precious metals market.
What I see in the markets, Chris, is that both gold and silver are still not trading in what I would consider to be a free market. And much of our capital markets, in my view, represent little more than a massive crime scene. We see the long arm of government control in not only the precious metals arena, but we see it in various currency markets, and we see it very heavily in the bond market. And to put your listenership sort of in the picture in terms of a free versus a highly manipulated and distorted market, I would suggest people take a look at the way that Bitcoin currently trades, and you will have a pretty good idea, if you watch Bitcoin for a few days, the way a real freely traded market actually operates. The reason why Bitcoin is able to trade and operate somewhat as a free market is because Bitcoin has a unique quality that isn't present in gold or silver or bonds. Namely, you cannot sell a Bitcoin that you do not own, or that has not been mined. But what this does is it takes all this optionality out of the trade in Bitcoin. And when I say optionality, or the rude manipulation of the futures markets, we did see in the aftermath of the U.S. presidential election on election night, we saw the market's initial reaction to the unexpected Trump win. We saw that immediately gold went up close to $100, and the stock market futures plummeted on that same news. But, you know, late in the evening, the apparatus that controls the pricing of so much of our markets in the Western world came to work, and they reversed those superior gains in the precious metals, which intuitively was correct. The tremendous drop in the equity futures, which was intuitively correct, and these movements were reversed by force. In the case of gold, literally, in paper form, in the 72 hours following the presidential election, more than three times the globe's annual production of gold out of the Earth's crust was sold in paper form inside of 72 hours after the election. What this amounts to, Chris, it's gold that, A, does not exist, and technically it's gold that will never exist for sale. And it's through the selling of these paper products on futures markets or digital markets. A lot of people refer to this as paper gold, but this enables the price managers, which in my books is the U.S. Treasury, are able to keep the price of gold suppressed, meaning that the alternative to the precious metals, or sorry, to the dollar being the precious metals. They want to keep their fiat money backed by nothing, looking superior to real money, which is precious metal.
Cryptocurrencies are something I've dabbled with personally, primarily a silver-backed cryptocurrency I call Silverbit, piggyback blockchain off of Ethereum. And any of my listeners who know, Ethereum is, I think, going to overtake the rest of the cryptocurrency space eventually. That's just my personal opinion. At least it has the opportunity. But back on point, they've sort of let the genie out of the bottle. And we talked about this in last week's show. I mean, Gresham's Law, bad money drives away the good money. Our authorities haven't really grasped yet, and maybe this is a topic for another show, there's a new bad money. Of course, we don't think of it as bad. We don't think of this revolution in bitcoins as being bad, but it really is a totally, in many ways, free money, unless we want to get down to the heavily energy and algorithm intensive. The Chinese are way ahead of us on this because they have access to virtually free energy, as I'm sure you know. I really wonder if the Fed and the Treasury and their economists have pondered and examined just where this is going to lead. The dollar's reserve currency status, I don't think it can survive, can it? A competing money.
I would respond to that by saying the rise in the popularity and the usage of cryptocurrencies, in my view, is the manifestation of the law of unintended consequences, because it's my belief that naturally, in a freely traded market, gold and silver would have risen very, very dramatically and sufficiently that they would be currently expressing themselves as very, very meaningful, viable alternatives to fiat currency, which has been extremely mismanaged by the stewards of the world's reserve currency, the U.S. financial elites, and the central banking community around the world, because the European Central Bank's doing a very poor job as well in managing the euro. My view that the rise of the cryptocurrencies has happened precisely because gold and silver has not been allowed to do and perform its historical function. And the rise of the cryptocurrencies is showing us, or is the manifestation of humanity's dislike and lack of trust in fiat money. People intuitively know when they're getting a bad deal. And you see, it's like water finds its level. If you try to put 2 gallons of water in a 1 gallon pail, the 1 gallon that cannot be contained in the pail finds a resting spot elsewhere. And the rise of the cryptocurrencies is effectively the faith which has been displaced from fiat currencies finding its place elsewhere. And this will continue to accelerate because the clowns running our global fiat money systems have no plans other than to continue to create more fiat money at increasingly swift rates.
But what officials have done by corralling the gold and silver markets in such fashion, using the most unbelievable paper schemes since, I think, arguably, the great revolutions in France, just hasn't been anything like this since John Law. You have an inevitable filling of the void, this brilliant algorithm we call Bitcoin. Is it possible that even Bitcoin will eventually have inherent limitations, many of which we already know and we've found? Folks will turn back to that barbarous relic.
I believe so, but what I find fascinating about it all, Chris, is the sheer irony in what's occurred, because what the managers of our fiat system have tried to pull on humanity by employing algorithms and futures and derivatives, they've attempted to limit the rise in the price of gold and silver using these algorithmic computer-assisted trading schemes, and it's going to be an algorithm that undoes them. So currencies are algorithms.
I think it's just as ironic, a Satoshi, the smallest denomination of a Bitcoin, we refer to as a Satoshi, which of course also the name of the creator. Is it possible that this was really little more than a CIA side project? I think someone would have stepped up and claimed responsibility at $1,000 a Bitcoin right now. I mean, keep in mind, just a few years ago, it was pennies on the dollar. From what I've read, Satoshi put aside, I think it's 500,000, and then the rest were placed in the blockchain. So I'd like your thoughts on whether or not this might just be a CIA operation or KGB, a parallel, you know, monetary system.
Well, I do believe that necessity is the mother of all creation, and it's been the poor stewardship of our global fiat monetary system. It's the manifestation of the failure of Keynesian economics that has given rise to the advent of these cryptocurrencies. Without a doubt, exactly who's created it, I don't claim. Look at the current system. I mean, we can examine. I mean, it was just last week there was a paper made public by a chap by the name of Grant Williams. And if you go to YouTube and you plug in the name Grant Williams and along with the words mines and money, you will see a presentation which was given late last year at a big conference, and I believe it was in Singapore at the Mines and Money Conference. It's an annual event. What he illustrates in a very, very, very short space of time in this YouTube video is how the world is de-dollarizing. In de-dollarizing, he illustrates how crude oil is being transacted in other than dollars between major parties in the world. And when other countries deal in crude oil, big enough countries deal in crude oil in sufficient amounts in non-dollars, the amount of dollars they need to hold in their reserves lessens over time. What we have seen empirically, and Grant Williams illustrates this in his YouTube video, countries like China and Saudi Arabia have actually begun to lessen their holdings of U.S. government securities. And they've been doing this at quite a rapid clip now over the past 18 months to 2 years. And the implications for this on a go-forward basis, when you take into consideration that China and Saudi Arabia are historically two of America's biggest financiers and creditors who buy up the American debt when it's issued, they are holding less today than they were 2 years ago. And what this means is, and people should be asking some very serious questions about what the implications of this are, if China and Saudi Arabia are buying less, who's picking up the slack? Because America continues to run massive deficits. So not only do we have problems consuming or allocating the outstanding debt, we're still piling on, I don't know, roughly at least $1 trillion a year to the outstanding. So who's buying the bonds, Chris? That's my question, and nobody seems to be able to give me an answer that I can stomach or believe. Who is buying the bonds?
This is a rhetorical question, I feel.
Yes, I have a theory on exactly who's buying the bonds. It's my belief that the Exchange Stabilization Fund in America is actually buying these bonds with dark dollars that aren't even admitted to exist.
The plunge protection team.
But it's my belief that debt is being bought by America in dollars that do exist, but they exist on the dark side of the U.S. Treasury's ledger. Because they are dollars that are purchasing this debt that's being liquidated by foreign holders, it cannot show up in the reserve accounts of any other entity. And as such, this debt moves to the dark side of the U.S. Treasury's ledger because that's where the dollars came from that were used to purchase it. We've heard stories, or at least I've heard stories, over the past number of months that the world is actually suffering from a condition of too few dollars. And anybody who actually believes that, in my view, given everything that we empirically know has occurred, the fact that countries are rebuking the dollar and are trying to liquidate their reserves or lessen them, to me, speaks absolutely against the notion that there are not enough dollars in the world.
I think it's just like anything else, you know, like a VCR. I mean, it's going to carve out its own spot and maybe eventually overtake the currency space, or maybe just move in parallel, as we still have movie theaters today. But think of it as a diversification tool and not as a substitute for the precious metals, because if the power goes out, if there's a major emergency and whatnot, good luck getting, you know, your local folks, maybe even neighbors, to accept even a private Bitcoin wallet that's separate from your hard drive. It's just not going to work. Whereas, you know, junk silver and small denominated gold coins will be your go-to asset in times of trouble. And I think it just always will be the case.
I was just going to say, Chris, I think you stated it very accurately. Fiat currencies, whether it be dollars, Reichsmarks, Zimbabwean dollars, or the fiat currencies run from, as I've heard it before, from A to Z, a currency that begins with the letter A. I guess you could say the American dollar, really, I guess, begins with A, to Z being Zloty, which is another failed fiat currencies. But fiat currencies come and go. Gold and silver endure.
Rob Kirby, please tell people more about the services you provide and what they'll find when they reach you.
Well, you can find a lot of educational material and archives in my at my site, and new material as it comes along. And you can catch me on the web at KirbyAnalytics.com.
Going to look forward to having you back on the show.
Pleasure being with you, Chris.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. More and more of what we are told is true. More and more of what we are led to believe is factual. In much of the mainstream media and from experts, is in many cases turning out to be upside down and inside out. One doesn't have to be a change strategist to understand that the inaction that has dominated the U.S. political landscape for most of this year is going to cost a lot of political incumbents their re-election, their integrity, and their legacy. Nothing burgers are turning into whoppers right in front of our very eyes. Manipulation appears to be everywhere. It used to be that those who discussed how precious metals were manipulated were looked at with a raised eyebrow. But now so much is manipulated that it's hard to keep track of the ever-expanding cast of characters. Investigations are being leaked. Predators are being unmasked. Tight-lipped industries, Hollywood, and political players are turning on each other and eating their own in a desperate attempt to save themselves and what may be left of their own stigmatized public reputation. Generally speaking, people don't like the word manipulation because no one likes to be conned, played, or handled. Manipulation is one of those politically incorrect words that act like a post-hypnotic suggestion, a trigger word that in many cases gets people to shut down their mind and thinking process without engaging in further debate. There's a lot of words that people use to shut down debate and avoid intellectual, reasoned conversations that could lead to meaningful change and understanding. But often the goal of debate is confirmation bias, reinforcing existing points of view, and avoiding any give and take to find realistic solutions. Two traits that tend to be a casualty of this process are transparency and honesty. The rise of social media has created a somewhat collectivist mindset in that people want to be accepted by their friends, many of whom are simply acquaintances. Peer pressure today is at a fever pitch. The essence of the individual is slowly being sacrificed to the group. Learning, understanding, and asking questions is discouraged by many, especially if it touches on words, topics, or historical events that are branded or rebranded as bad. We all should remember that if we fail to learn, assess, and reassess our history, especially those aspects that are uncomfortable or downright despicable by today's standards, we may be doomed to repeat it, and that is never a good idea. So much is happening in the world today that makes a mockery of actual justice. It's been said that justice can be like a fishing net that catches the little fish and allows the big fish to swim through. It's important to remember that no one alive today is responsible for abhorrent chapters in history or guilty of crimes that were committed before they were born. It's a constantly challenging process to follow the truth wherever it leads you and act accordingly. It's a constantly challenging process to follow the truth wherever it leads you and invest accordingly. Even more, it's a constantly challenging process to follow the truth wherever it leads you and live your life on purpose instead of by accident or default. When you feel you are being manipulated, conned, played, handled, or managed by others, whether it be in person, on the phone, the computer, or TV, picture yourself holding a one-way mirror toward the person in question so that their lies, negative energy, and attempt at coercion reflects back on them, like a magnifying glass frying an ant. And picture yourself on the other side of that one-way mirror, looking through it with greater and greater transparency, and seeing the situation for what it actually is. Because then, and only then, can you walk away mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually from the bankrupt ideas and toxicity that others would dare impose upon you, and continue the process of living your life on purpose. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.